Good morning, counsel. This is the case of Ryan versus Streck Inc. And we will begin by introducing members of the court. And then we will recognize counsel. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now by seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning, William Castle.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Good morning, Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Pavick.
And John Friedenberg.
Ms. Boracker, are you with us this morning?
I am here, Your Honor. Good morning.
And Ms. Butter, are you here with us this morning?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And do either counsel have any questions before we begin this morning?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Then, Ms. Boracker, good morning to you again, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and Your Honor. Good morning to opposing counsel, Ms. Souter. May it please the court. I represent the appellant, Ryan, today in her appeal from Sarpy County District Court proceedings. I would ask to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please. District Court should be reversed because it erred by dismissing Stacy Ryan's claim for violating the statute of limitations. It ignored the controlling United States Supreme Court precedent and the relevant federal and Nebraska statutes on tolling of claim when a federal court exercises its supplemental jurisdiction over a state law claim. Now, this case has a lengthy history, and I could spend a good amount of time going over the dates of filing and the dates of dismissal and the dates of appeals. Those are the material facts that would guide my argument here today. And I'm happy to address any of those at any time, and I'm sure I'll get into it as my argument proceeds. But to begin, I'd like to point out what I believe is positive in this matter, and that is the United States Supreme Court case of Ortiz versus District of Columbia that was decided back in 2018. And the statute that was reviewed in that case, the federal statute 28 USC 1367, which provides for federal court supplemental jurisdiction and also provides in its plain language for tolling of statute of limitations for state law claims while they're pending in a federal court under its supplemental jurisdiction. That case took that statute, looked at the language, and made plain what it thought was already clear in the statute, that when a federal district court has exercised its supplemental jurisdiction over a state law claim, the statute of limitations is paused, or in other words, the timing for the statute of limitations stops. The clock on it stops while the claim is pending in federal district court or in a federal appeals court, and the timing on the statute of limitation begins to tick again if and when the federal court loses its supplemental jurisdiction. And so that is important in this case because of the procedural history that I referenced a little bit ago and the amount of time that the case was pending before the federal district court in the District of Nebraska and then before the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals on appeal before it then made its way back to the Sarpy County District Court. If I'm right about the Ortiz case and its application here, if I'm right about the application of 1367's language to this case, I think that the court would have to reverse the Sarpy County District Court because the district court's order of dismissal gave no credence to how to calculate that statute of limitations in light of the tolling that's provided by 28 USC 1367. Now, Streck has never meaningfully addressed the Ortiz case and why it contends that it shouldn't apply here. And it doesn't appear that the district court fully addressed the Ortiz case either in its decision to dismiss Stacy Ryan's breach of contract claim. And I think that that is pretty telling. I think Streck's argument here before the court contorts the law on this subject. Given how the Sarpy County District Court decided the motion to dismiss, Streck is now left to argue that the federal court somehow lost jurisdiction at some point over the breach of contract claim that was before it, because of newly discovered evidence that was offered after the district court in the federal court system dismissed the claim, but then considered the newly discovered evidence, and then the case went up on appeal. It is incorrect to say that the federal district court would have lost jurisdiction of this claim when it had a post-dismissal motion to amend its judgment pending, and it ruled on that. It ultimately denied that, but then the case went up on appeal to the Eighth Circuit, and that court continued to exercise its jurisdiction, considered the post-dismissal motion, and then entered a ruling to remand back to the federal district court for consideration of the Rule 59 motion based on newly discovered evidence.
Counsel, was that Rule 59 motion timely filed?
Yes, it was, Your Honor, and the Eighth Circuit noted that in its opinion. Unfortunately, the procedure here shows that there were two Rule 59e motions. The Eighth Circuit only considered and only, you know, exercised jurisdiction over the timely filed motion that it did note in its opinion was timely.
That was the March 2016 motion?
Correct, Your Honor. Correct. And so, you know, I may just jump into the procedural history here because I think that that sets out the timeline of how the statute of limitations has to be calculated and applied in this case. Stacey Ryan's claim is for a breach of her shareholder purchase agreement, which accrued at its earliest around August 21st, 2012, when she signed the shareholder agreement and payment was made for her millions of shares of Streck Inc. stock that she owned at that time. The claim was under Nebraska law, and so is governed by the 5-year statute of limitations under Nebraska law. She initially brought the claim in state court, but then decided to add some federal securities claims and preferred to have it in a federal court. And so there was a bit of tolling that occurred on the claim while it was pending in the Sarpy County District Court way back in 2015 for about a month.
And counsel, that was a claim for breach of contract regarding the redemption agreement. Is that correct?
It's a breach of contract claim regarding the stockholder purchase agreement, and the redemption agreement is kind of part and parcel of that because the stockholder agreement made reference to and essentially used the standard for calculating a purchase price that was contained in a redemption agreement.
Redemption agreement sets forth what value should be placed upon the stock at the time of the repurchase. Is that correct?
That's correct. The redemption agreement provided how to calculate that purchase price. And that was an issue that ultimately ended up being crucial to the Eighth Circuit and the reason for its remand, because
that breach of contract was filed originally in state court, then in federal court, then dismissed by the federal district court. But on the motion to alter amend is sent back for the federal district court to reconsider the newly discovered evidence allegation on that breach of contract claim. Is that correct?
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
So did that breach of contract ever change? Is it the same breach of contract claim as it was before? Is it different because we have newly discovered facts we're relying upon? I mean, that seems to be the crux of the case.
I agree, Your Honor, and it has never changed. I think that the breach of contract claim is actually very straightforward and simple. It's that there was a shareholder agreement that was entered into in August of 2012, and it said that the price would be calculated according to this and use this valuation date. Now we have some newly discovered evidence that that is not the valuation date that was actually used, and so it should have been a different price. And because the price is, you know, less than a dollar per share, but given the number of shares, it's a substantial difference in terms of the price.
Thank you.
And so on that point, Your Honor, you know, we the complaint that's filed in Sarpy County District Court.
What actually is the dollar difference?
It's less than a dollar, Your Honor. And I couldn't tell you the precise cents right now, but given that Stacey owned millions and millions of shares, it accounts for a something that's worth continuing to litigate over, Your Honor.
So we're talking about millions of dollars here?
I'm not sure if it would calculate to that. I think that there are also some factual concerns about the value itself and if there are other valuations that could have existed. Given kind of the water under the bridge since all of this, you know, evidence that's not included in the federal court case has come to light since then. And so I think the government.
So are you telling us there's more newly discovered evidence?
No, Your Honor, I I guess I would put it this way, in that we have pleaded the facts that support the breach of contract claim in the Sarpy County District Court. It's the same claim that was made in the federal court that was filed back in 2015. The newly discovered evidence that was presented to the federal district court and the Eighth Circuit was something that made the claim plausible and should have been included had we known it in the federal complaint originally filed. We have since learned additional evidence and learned additional facts that would go into discovery and proof of our claim at trial, but not that it makes it into a different claim or a different breach of contract.
So let me ask you again, are we talking about millions of dollars here?
I think it's hundreds of thousands, could potentially be millions.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Your Honor.
Counsel, when the matter came back from the Eighth Circuit, what did the federal district court do? And what did they consider when they did that?
The matter was remanded from the Eighth Circuit, and I believe that the parties approached Judge Smithcamp requesting some consideration of the procedural posture of the case, since the remand meant that the motion for the Rule 59 motion offering the newly considered evidence was back before the court. And so the court issued an order rather than considering that motion to instead decide to decline to continue to exercise its supplemental jurisdiction, citing the fact that Stacy would be able to bring the claim in state court again within 6 months.
Did the federal district court take into consideration the issues of tolling the statute of limitations?
Yes, it did, Your Honor. Judge Smithcamp there expressly noted that one of the factors that the court was to consider in whether to decline to exercise supplemental jurisdiction was whether there would be prejudice to the plaintiff through the inability to bring the claim because the statute of limitations had run. And so the court there expressly noted in her written opinion that Nebraska Revised Statute 25-201.01 would be applicable here to give Stacy that 6 month savings clause to go bring her claim in state court within 6 months, which is precisely what we did.
Does it have binding effect upon us?
Well, I don't know about that, Your Honor. I think that it was a consideration taken into account by Judge Smithcamp. I think that the Ortiz case would be controlling. In that case, the United States Supreme Court considered a split among state Supreme Courts and circuit courts on the issue of how to read that tolling and whether it meant that the statute of limitations was tolled throughout the pendency of a federal case. I do believe that that is the controlling precedent.
Thank you.
And I see my time has run out. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Booter, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Ms. Baritza, my name is Victoria Buter, and I represent the Appalee Streck in this matter. I would like to start by focusing on the very specific procedural issues that I think arise in this case, because while it's a technical issue, it really is quite straightforward. And then I'd like to, with that kind of backdrop, address the comments made by Ms. Baritza and the questions asked by Justice Funk in connection with the breach of contract claim. So as the court is aware, when Stacy Ryan filed this case in federal court, she did so based upon federal question jurisdiction. And the only claim that gave rise to that jurisdiction was a claim under the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934. There was no diversity jurisdiction here. The rest of the claims were all state law claims. Streck moved to dismiss the complaint in its entirety, and the court granted that motion to dismiss. So the court did exercise supplemental jurisdiction at that time over the claims that were then pending before the district court. After the court dismissed the case with prejudice and entered judgment on that, Stacy Ryan filed a motion to alter and amend. That motion to alter and amend raised various different issues, but what is pertinent to this case is that it raised a claim that they had discovered alleged newly discovered evidence relating to a later valuation that they contend should have been used to determine the share price for the purchase of Ms. Ryan's shares. That argument went solely to state law claims. It did not go to and could not address the reason why the court dismissed the securities claim in the case that was dismissed on causation grounds under well-established Eighth Circuit precedent that as a matter of law, there can be no causation when a redemption agreement such as this exists. At the time, therefore, that Ms. Ryan offered her new alleged newly discovered evidence, the district court had already dismissed the claim that gave rise to the federal court having jurisdiction in this case. In order for a federal court to exercise jurisdiction over state law claims, there has to be pending a claim that gives rise to original jurisdiction. And in this particular instance, because the court had already addressed dismissed the original claim that gave rise to federal court jurisdiction, the court could not exercise supplemental jurisdiction over newly discovered evidence that went only to a state law claim. And for that reason, we submit that the district court in Sarpy County correctly dismissed this case based upon the fact that the court did not take jurisdiction over the precise claim that was remanded by the Eighth Circuit here.
Is it your contention that the newly discovered evidence is a new claim, or is it newly discovered evidence in support of the originally pled breach of contract claim?
That's a great question, Justice Papik, exactly where I was going next. It is our contention that it is a new claim for a couple of reasons.
Can I stop you? I'll let you go there in a second.
Okay.
If we disagree, if we think that it's the same claim, does your argument fall apart?
if the court contends and determines that this claim falls directly and squarely and was pled under, I think it's count 9 of the original complaint that was a breach of contract claim, then yes, I do believe the court exercised supplemental jurisdiction over that claim. And I do believe, therefore, it would be timely filed under the statutes that the toll 1367 and the Nebraska state statute.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And you can go back to where you were headed.
Okay. Thank you. The reason I believe it is a different claim, Justices, is the following. If you look, well, first of all, the Eighth Circuit, when they issued their opinion, they affirmed everything with the exception of a limited issue related to this newly discovered evidence. And that includes an affirmation of the February 2016 order that dismissed in its entirety count 9 and the rest of the counts in the original complaint. But I think more significantly, if you look at the claims that were pled in the original complaint, and if you look specifically at the breach of contract claim that was originally pled by Ms. Ryan in her complaint, that claim goes to allegations that Ms. Ryan did not receive fair market value for the shares that were purchased by Strike. And if you look at the basis for the allegation she did not receive fair market value, the basis of that goes to allegations that Streck did not fully and completely provide information to the valuation firm, which was called Juris Valuation, in order to determine that price. Stacey Ryan admitted in her complaint that she received the valuation from the 2011 Juris Valuation report. This claim as to the newly discovered evidence is a different claim. It is not alleging that Streck somehow did not provide accurate information to Juris Valuation. It is a claim that Streck did not utilize the correct valuation report. And we believe under the pleading standards in federal court at the time that there would need to have been more set forth in that complaint to actually have this evidence fall under a claim that is made. And that is why, Your Honors, we believe that the Artis case is distinguishable here. In Artis, they specifically recognize that a claim had to be pending for Section 1367 to toll the statute of limitations. And here we do submit that there was no claim pending as to the specific breach of contract claim based on that newly discovered evidence, which means that the court could not exercise that supplemental jurisdiction.
Why did the Eighth Circuit remand the case to the district court if there was no jurisdiction? Shouldn't the Eighth Circuit have dismissed it?
Well, I would think potentially, yes, that the Eighth Circuit perhaps should have. I think when you look at this case, and Ms. Barutza alluded to this, there was a lot that was going on in the procedural and, frankly, substantive history of this piece of litigation. And the issues before the Eighth Circuit were many. There were significant issues that were addressed before the Eighth Circuit. This was a small portion of that, and they did remand it. But I would also note with regard to that, even if that shouldn't have happened, as the court is well aware, you cannot confer subject matter jurisdiction. even if there's an error or a mistake that is made in terms of remanding it to the district court or otherwise, subject matter jurisdiction either exists or it does not. And we would submit that there might have been an error in the way that it was remanded in this particular instance.
I think less about federal court jurisdiction in this job than maybe I used to, but can't a federal district court continue to exercise supplemental jurisdiction over state law claims even after the federal claims are dismissed? Isn't that a matter of discretion for the federal district court?
It is a matter of discretion. If the federal district court wishes to, they absolutely can continue to exercise supplemental jurisdiction over a claim that is pending. What we're submitting here is there was no claim pending relating to the alleged newly discovered evidence while there was any claim open that would give rise to jurisdiction that would allow the court to have even engaged in an exercise of supplemental jurisdiction at that time.
But the Eighth Circuit sent something back. They sent something back to happen in district court. And why, unless and until the district court determines they're going to decline to exercise their jurisdiction, until they do that, doesn't that court have jurisdiction?
And we would argue in this, again, very specific case with these specific facts and this specific timeline, there never was jurisdiction over this specific and precise claim. I agree with you generally, absolutely. When the Eighth Circuit would remand like this, there would be jurisdiction that would continue. But in this instance, given the fact that no federal court ever really took jurisdiction over a state law claim that was being argued, that claim was never pled, it was never pending anywhere. As a result of that, there was no, essentially nothing to remand that fell within the jurisdiction of the federal district court.
Could the federal district court, would it have been within its power to decide otherwise and to proceed with the claim that was remanded by the Eighth Circuit? To say, I'm going to exercise my supplemental jurisdiction, we're going to allow the complaint to be amended, and we're going to proceed on this newly discovered evidence, whatever it is.
I would submit in this instance, I don't believe so, because there was no jurisdiction of the federal court when this particular issue was raised. It was solely a new breach of contract claim, and there was nothing that was pending at the time that was first raised to give rise to jurisdiction of the federal court. So we do not believe under those circumstances that would have been appropriate.
Counsel, before your time expires, Streck filed a motion to strike and a motion to dismiss, and then neither one raised this issue of jurisdiction or statute of limitations or anything of that nature. And it wasn't until the court on its own sua sponte brought up the issue of statute of limitations as potentially an affirmative defense and then granted parties leave to brief the issue. Does that have any bearing on the procedure of where we are today?
Your Honor, we would submit that it does not. You are correct. Our motion to dismiss was focused, frankly, on the breadth of the complaint that was filed, going well beyond what was permitted by the Eighth Circuit. And we were intending to raise the statute of limitations in our answer. We just, at the time, when we looked at it, felt that it was not maybe appropriate for a motion to dismiss. Judge Cox, raised the issue. And when we, frankly, dug into it, we realized that it probably was appropriate for a motion to dismiss. And looking at it, there was not that distinction. And we did cite in our briefing certain cases that allow a court to raise that issue sua sponte.
Very good. Thank you.
I see
is
my time is up.
Affirmative defense?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat
is
that?
An affirmative defense.
A statute of limitations defense? Correct. Is an affirmative defense.
Does that change your answer at all?
It does not, Your Honor. I think if you look at the cases we cited, that a court is permitted to raise something, even if it is an affirmative defense, this early on in the proceedings, sua sponte.
Thank you.
Thank you. And my time is up. And we would ask that the court affirm the district court's order. And we thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, counsel. That concludes arguments in Ryan versus Streck Inc. So counsel, you are excused. Thank you very much for participating by WebEx today.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Your Honors.
And the court is adjourned for the day.